The Bastards of Boston Baseball Podcast.
Back to Folk. Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champion. Game over, series over, and the Red Sox are world champs again.
Yes, indeed. Here it comes. Another edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball.
Finding great candidates to hire can be like, well, trying to find a needle in a haystack. Sure, you can post your job to some job board, but then all you can do is hope the right person comes along. Which is why you should try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. Its powerful technology identifies people with the right experience and actively invites them to apply to your job. You get qualified candidates fast. So while other companies might deliver a lot of hay, ZipRecruiter finds you what you're looking for. The needle in the haystack.
See why 4 out of 5 employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free. At ZipRecruiter.com/zip. That's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
Save big money right now at Menards. From smoke and carbon monoxide detectors to fire extinguishers and more, Kidde Home Safety products keep your family protected in case of emergencies. Smoke and carbon monoxide detectors are perfect for your living spaces, offering protection and peace of mind. Save big money on all Kidde products at Menards. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
The Red Sox throttle the Minnesota Twins in the final game of the series, taking it, winning by a score of 13-1, thanks in part to a less than stellar performance by Roger Clemens' son, coming off of second base to take the mound. Boston raises their record to 59 wins, 51 losses, keeping them firmly in the wild card race with a day off before the deadline comes to a close. I'm Nick the Voice, joined today by Jeremy Schilling and Chris Felico, and we are the Bastards of Boston. Want more? You can go to bastardsofbostonbaseball.com for great written articles. Now, I think the natural starting point, obviously the score was a big part of it. The bats were really swinging tonight. Obviously, there was a bit of stat padding done in that final inning, of course. It's so funny to see Masataka Yoshida hit his first home run of the season off of Cody Clemens, of all people, who was throwing absolute heat, 50 miles per hour or so. But let's talk about Brian Bello, who I feel like, despite a couple shaky, you know, at-bats pretty much in terms of his control, I thought he looked really great, and he ended up giving us 7 innings of one-run baseball.
Yeah, I think... Oh, go ahead, Jeremy.
No, you go.
Yeah, so I was going to say, there were some shaky moments. I think the fact that he only had 4 strikeouts and 4 walks was, I don't want to say concerning, but it was kind of disappointing. But you take it when you go 7 innings, because it seems like our starters, either they'll get, you know, between 7 and 10 strikeouts, couple of walks, and only do it in 5 or 6 innings. So it's kind of like, pick your poison. I'll take the 7 innings, especially the way it's been going for our bullpen, how much it's been taxed the last couple of weeks. So I thought it was good overall. I was a little worried when it was 1-1, but then all of a sudden, you know, Sox scored a touchdown, 2 field goals. So we'll take it.
I mean, the game started where Story hits the home run and then Bayo comes right back and gives up the home run. And obviously that was it from the Twins off. And so another good day. I this is such a difference before we got hot before the All-Star break. More guys are going 6 and 7 innings, and you're going to see better results, better consistent results from the bullpen, because it's just, you're just putting less pressure on them. It's less innings is what I mean by that. So the big number for me is the 7 innings. I think he could, you know, we'll see what happens today and tomorrow, which I think is going to be not a chance that he's starting the second game of a playoff series. You know, I hate the walks. I hate the walks from anybody. I'd much rather be beaten by a base hit, but so that's my take.
Yeah, I agree with you. The volume was really nice because, I mean, Bayo's always been a guy, I feel, who he's struggled badly with wasted pitches. That's kind of been his profile so far in the league. And so to see him pitch not just well but efficiently, be able to give those 6-7 inning performances regularly, that is such a huge transformation for this rotation. It really does give us an anchor in that sort of three spot that we badly need. If we can add a solid number two to this rotation, I really do feel like Bayo and Giolito make up a great 3-4 combo right now with the way that they're pitching. We just kind of need that connection, you know, that other frontline guy I would love to get, whether it's Merrill Kelly, whether it's someone else. Maybe it's not something that comes, unfortunately, until the offseason. Maybe we do have to wait for the winter. It would be very, very sweet if it came now. That's for certain.
Yeah, I think, you know, one of the other encouraging things that's kind of gone under the radar the last couple of weeks is Story. You know, he was slumping really bad in the beginning of the season, and he kind of got hot, and he's gotten cold a couple of times since then, but he's mitigated it to a point where it's not continuing for a month and a half. It's maybe a week and a half at worst, but he's still drawing walks in between. He's not consistently striking out at the high fastball at the rate that he was in the beginning of the season. So I think even for him, like with the defense that he's giving us, if he could mitigate the slumps and keep him to where, you know, it's a week at most, and be able to still be productive defensively and get back to hitting, I think it's something that this team really needs, to be honest with you. It's something that we've lacked, especially from him and his production the last couple of years.
Definitely. You know, what's very funny is something that I've been complaining about over the past week or so is the lack of production at the cleanup spot so far this season. And I don't feel, or I haven't felt, that Trevor Story was a super great fit for the cleanup spot on the team for hitting fourth, just because high whiff, high K guys, you know, that sort of scares me. But funnily enough, I decided to dig down into Trevor Story's splits in terms of his batting position in the lineup and how he performs at different spots. And I don't necessarily put too much credence on that type of thing. Obviously, when you shrink sample sizes down, they're going to become more unreliable. But so far, Trevor Story this season, his OPS is far and away the best when he's batting fourth. So far in that cleanup spot, he's slashing 301, 333, 516. That's an 849 OPS. So funnily enough, you know, as much as Story has struggled so far this year, and as much as the cleanup spot has been so bad this year, it seems like Story being there, at least in his time there, and not saying it's predictive of going forward, but so far he's been doing a pretty good job cleaning up. Who would have guessed?
Yeah, to me, the issues at the four spot are just an indication of the roster imbalance. Your four hitter really should be a plug and play type of guy. He's your four hitter. The best teams have that. But we are, especially once we traded Devers, you know, we're a bat short from the middle of the order perspective. It's one of the things that I think that Breslow should be looking really hard at addressing. And then, you know, over the next 24 hours or 21 hours, whatever left before the 6 p.m. deadline. But again, I have very little hope that they're going to do that. So it's going to continue to be Trevor Story here. I think you're still going to see Narvaez. I think if Abreu gets going a little bit, he could slot in there against righties. Just right now, he's not hitting. So, you know, but look, I know Story bothers people, but that's who he is. And if you can get him streaking in a playoff series, he's the type of guy that could actually win you a series, believe it or not, although he's never won anything in his major league career.
Yeah, definitely. He's kind of like Jackie Bradley in that regard. You know, brutal. Jackie comparison. Bradley would go on these horrible stretches, and then 1 month out of the year, that dude would look like the hottest hitter in baseball. And sure enough, in 2018, he was a huge part of our ALCS victory versus the Astros.
Yeah, no, I think, Like I said, I'm encouraged by Story. I like the fact that, again, he's not slumping as bad. He's still hot or cold, hit or miss, but defense is giving us, with the average he's giving us, RBIs and the home runs to this point, and the fact that he hasn't gotten severely injured is a pleasant surprise. I'll take it to this point. I think, you know, to Jeremy's point, the roster imbalance in the sense that we can't seem to nail down, you know, the 1 through 4 to this point. You know, on one hand, it's frustrating, but what I will say is in the last week, it's shown a little bit of flexibility. Like, we've had success kind of mixing and matching in the top four spot. Granted, again, it's against the Minnesota Twins. Are you going to be able to do that against good teams with good pitching? Probably not. So I think that's where, you know, this deadline is going to be extremely crucial, being able to solidify a foundation for this team as we close out the season.
The one thing I'll say about Story, having seen him play consistently first time in I don't know how long it's been, he plays at short, expect him to make. He had a jump. This is not a comparison of Story to Jeter, but it was like a Jeter type play. And I'm just sitting, it was in a big moment late in the game. I think it was the 8th inning. And it was just, and he's done a couple where he's decided to just go quick release, long hop, knowing that it's a quick runner. And he's made the right decision. And his knack for knowing the timing to get the ball to first is excellent. And look, you know, fans of the Red Sox can say what they want about the injury and the contract. And anytime you sign a contract like that, it comes with a large responsibility to the organization to be great. But the clubhouse loves this guy. Like, he is a leader of the team. He's leading from on the field. So it's more impactful, you know, to the roster. And, you know, between him and Bregman, those are the veterans that have to lead us down the stretch unless Breslow surprises us and makes a move for another veteran.
Definitely. A big thing with Story, too, I agree. His defense, that jump throw he's been doing, it seems like that's becoming a signature move almost this year. And what's really nice to see is early on in the season, there were some serious concerns about his, not just his range at shortstop, but his arm strength. There were a couple big throws where it felt like, oh man, if he just had a little more oomph on that, he would have gotten a guy. Overall on the season, right now, his defensive run saved measured is one above average. His outs above average is one below average. So by that measure, he's pretty much an average defender at shortstop. But being that he started the season kind of poorly there, it makes sense that as the season's gone on, that, you know, the numbers sort of moving up to average kind of match our eyes, where he's been playing above average defense, really, in order to balance that out from the earlier on in the season. One thing as well, just to switch gears, I wanted to talk about two outfielders, right, which is Willier Abreu and Jarren Duran. Willier Abreu is a very feast or famine hitter. That's just something that I'm starting to come to terms with. You know, he was robbed of a home run the other night. Harrison Bader made a pretty decent play. Wasn't a phenomenal play. The ball wasn't that high up off the wall. He didn't have to jump too far to get it. It didn't look. But, you know, Abreu is our big power guy at this point in the lineup, aside from Story. But it is a shame to sort of see him go cold. It kind of feels like he's a guy who swings for the fences no matter what. And being how inconsistent our situational baseball has been, how hard it's been to score with runners in scoring position, that type of thing is frustrating to watch. Of course, the guy's got an 808 OPS on the season. He's gold glove caliber defense. Not at all concerned about the guy's production long term, but it is definitely something to keep an eye on.
Yeah, I would agree with you, Nick. I think with Willier Abreu, he's one of those, and listen, admittedly, this is even my personal opinion on him, like in the war room. On the days where he comes in and he gets two home runs for you and you know, you blow a team out, or you just sweep one by, you're like, yeah, man, I mean, if you're going to trade one of them, maybe it's Duran. But then Duran comes back and he's making these amazing plays. He's stealing bases. Heck, even the last 2 days, he's gone yard, right? So, like, even now he's starting to show a little bit of power. And then, of course, it's in a moment where Willier Abreu swinging for the fences and he's not hitting it. Granted, he was robbed of that home run from Bader. But nonetheless, he's not showing that same offensive production. He's in those hot and cold. And he's not bringing much else. And they're both pretty good defensively. The thing is, even though I would say Abreu's gold glove probably a little bit more consistent than Durant. He doesn't have the athletic ability to chase down, you know, those tough plays that Durant
raw
can,
speed,
right?
Yeah, raw speed.
Yeah, he doesn't have that closing speed for those tough plays, especially in right field. So if I had to pick from the two for this team this year, I'm sticking with Durant. Long term with the intangibles, there's an argument to be made that obviously Abreu is probably the better bet. But yeah, no, it is definitely frustrating, and it's going to be interesting to see if he's one of the guys that's a part of the next 24 hours or less than 24 hours at this point.
Yeah, Abreu for me, I put this in context. He's only a year and a half into his big league career. So he's going to continue to improve with his approach at the plate, and I think he will be more consistent. Some guys are just streaky. Story's been in the league 10 years. He's a streaky hitter. That's who he is. But Abreu, I still think there's room for improvement there from an approach because his chase rate's not as high as a Rafaela, who, you know, just will – he, like, predetermines I'm going to swing. Kind of like a little leaguer, frankly. So I'm not like dismayed by Abreu. I know he's going to be a big part of this team. I believe both players will be on the team, and I think they're both going to contribute. And if we do make the playoffs, these are two players we're going to be talking about at the end of the season while we're doing the preview for the round one of the playoffs, how they got hot at some point and how they had an impact on this team. The other thing with Abreu is he can seemingly come out of it, like out of nowhere. You know, he hit a two homer game last month, I believe, or the beginning of this month. I don't remember. And it was like the broadcast started off talking about how he wasn't really hitting. And all of a sudden he hit two home runs and then he's going for a week or 10 days. So young player, a year and a half into his major league career, is going to have a long career if he takes care of his body. And he's already won a gold glove as a rookie. To me, he's just a more natural outfielder. And if he had Rafaela's speed or Durant's speed, I think he could be like just a top defender. But as it were, he runs a little clunky. And, you know, he really has to, one, have a good jump and, two, have a good route. Whereas Rafaela, like the play today is a perfect indication of Rafaela can have – well, first of all, he's going to get a good jump. But, like, he did this, you know, this odd arc to where he – and I'm sure the ball was, you know, cutting – but he had the worst route to that ball from second base today with two outs that ended. I think it was the second inning. But that he just makes up with it for his also raw speed, but pure athleticism chasing a ball down. Durant, by the way, more of a raw speed jump guy. He can't make those adjustments. His athleticism is a little bit different than Rafaela. Also of note, that ball that Rafaela caught from second base, if he was playing center field, he would have made that play. Standing up, he would have chased it down. He would have had a better jump than Duran. Obviously he's playing center field every day, so his instincts are going to be better at this point in the season. But it was one of those balls where, you know, Rafaela the second baseman, Rafaela the center fielder, he would have made either play. That's just how special he is, I think, defensively.
Definitely. You know, it's one of those things that they say you just can't teach, right? You can't teach a guy speed. You can't teach a guy athleticism. Some guys, they're born with it. They're just gifted, you know, and a lot of these guys in the league are just genetic freaks. They're amazing what they can do. Others offset that with intellect, with baseball IQ, with general, you know, ability and adjustments. And then, you know, when you do get a guy like Sedan Rafael, I think it's sort of the best of both worlds. It's when you take a genetic freak and have him just be a student of his position and just figure out how to read the ball and whatnot and make those adjustments on the fly. And one last thing I wanted to say about, yeah, exactly. One thing I wanted to say about Willy Abreu too is one thing that's sort of reassuring to me is not only to your point, Jeremy, is he still young in his career, but even looking, if you break down his splits by the months, even the months like May and June, when he struggled with his on base ability, whether it was bat to ball skills, hitting for average, whether it was not really showing any discipline or drawing walks, he has been slugging pretty consistently through each month. And it is invaluable, especially with trading Devers, to have a guy like that in the lineup, have a guy who's going to be that big threat. And funnily enough, I was talking before about small sample sizes. Let's talk about, I think it's a 4 or 5 game sample size, which is how good is Jarren Duran batting third? I mean, this dude has been amazing at the position. He has been really amazing all month long, it feels like. He has been on fire this July. And I kind of love this adjustment of having Anthony with his eye, his discipline, batting leadoff, and then Bregman and Duran behind him. That just seems like a great recipe for me that gives this lineup a bit more cohesion, a bit more chemistry than it maybe had earlier in the year.
Yeah, it's funny. I'm looking at the comments here from some of our people. Sorry, Jeremy. But someone said, like, this team is so fun to watch. And the truth is, it is fun to watch because you're really starting to see the quote-unquote vision come to fruition that we've hoped for the last two seasons, where this plug and play, you got all these guys that can play a ton of different positions, and on any given day they could be batting first, fourth, ninth, whatever. And I mean, it's really the epitome of this team for this season. And whereas the last 2 years we absolutely fell on our face with that plan because we had players that could do half of the equation, but they couldn't put both pieces together offensively and defensively. And this team has been able to kind of mesh and mix to a point where they're making it work, you know, any given night, both ways. Do they struggle in certain areas on a given night? Yeah, sure. Then there's definitely a lot of frustrating things about this. And this isn't a conventional team, but it's a hell of a lot more fun to watch. And especially in lieu of the fact that we're winning for a change.
Yeah, as to the how Red Sox diehards comment was, to specifically his comment, this is an athletic baseball team. This is the groundwork for what I thought good baseball teams would look like after they instituted the pitch clock, where you have athleticism and speed, guys that are in better shape because the action's quicker, frankly. Nick, the change in the lineup with Roman hitting first and Duran hitting third, I was actually looking up a stat to make a point similar to yours, so I'm really glad you switched to this topic. Do you guys know right now Roman Anthony's, without looking, Nick, okay, do you know Roman Anthony's on base percentage? And if you don't, give me a guess.
I already looked before the show, so I won't say it. I won't take a guess.
Go ahead, Chris. Give me a shot. What do you think?
On base percent, I don't know, 385?
398. This guy's getting on base 40% right of the time. So this goes to make my point, right? Like the old, like, Indians comes to an example, Kenny Lofton hitting leadoff. You want speed on the bags when Albert Bell and all these guys come up, but that's not the modern game, because if you're only getting on base 34% of the time, that's another whatever maths people will tell you, less opportunity for Bregman and whoever is hitting third. So what did Cora say? We have now this guy that's getting on base at a ridiculous clip 40% of the time. Why not? I know he's not as fast, but he's young. He's somewhat athletic. He's not a plug in the bases. Why don't we just have more people on base, you know? And so I think it's the right move. I think it's the way it's going to look the rest of the year based on some things Cora has said. And it means that in the first inning, you're already putting pressure, because his understanding of the strike zone is unbelievable. I was listening to the game last night driving home late, and Fleming was talking about, it's his feeling that he's so good with his plate discipline that even as a rookie, umpires are kind of deferring to it. So I don't know about that yet, you know, but he's taken borderline pitches pretty comfortably and they're being called routinely balls. So, I mean, I think the move's the right play. Obviously, if both players were getting on base at the same clip, Duran would be your leadoff hitter. But as it were, let's have the guy that gets on 40% of the time get on base in the first inning.
Before you say anything, Nick, I want to take credit for this, because I've been dogging on Roman Anthony in the war room for like a week. And as soon as I opened my mouth and typed these words, he decided he wants to be an absolute freak. And I know there's stats that said he was doing well before that, but I've been frustrated by the lack of power and some of the other things in his game. But you give credit where it's due. I'm glad he was reading the war room chat and decided to turn it around.
Yeah.
But I mean, looking at some of these comments to support your point, Jeremy, like Randy Clemens, one of our regulars here, a favorite, he's batting 350 since the 9-0 home loss to Toronto back on June 27th. Like 36 for 103, pretty incredible. And then Nate has a comment. Roman looks more comfortable at the plate than Devers right now. Nate, the three of us on this podcast look more comfortable at the plate than Rafael Devers. So that's not really saying much, but the point's well taken. Sorry, Nick.
So to you, Roman Anthony's, he's like, and I agree. And I look back a couple of weeks ago when he was hitting for no power, his exit velocities was still pretty good. He's just hitting balls at guys. A little bit of luck comes into that, but he will, he's 21 years old. I'm so excited for what he's going to be when he puts some weight on his frame. Like obviously he's going to get in the weight room this year and he's going to come back. I would hope a guy like Duran and Chapman will get to him because those guys are freaks in the gym. Today he made an underrated play, and I want to talk about it. This is the ball in the first base hit. Story sells out, but just misses it. And he cuts the ball off with a proper angle, throws the ball accurately to Rafaela at second base, and then Rafaela with a ball right here, he turns and throws an absolute strike to Wong. And was it Clemens who got gunned down? Yep. And it wasn't close, and he was so out that everyone was, I personally was waiting for a blocking the plate challenge. And Wong did a great job waiting to block the plate until he had the ball. So there were three points to that play, but it was all put in motion by Roman Anthony making a routine play so that the rest of the thing could develop. So I do notice he's a little more comfortable catching fly balls and he's rounding into already, just a plus player all over the place.
Absolutely. I had the same exact play bookmarked in my mind where I'm just like, what I loved about that is you expect a rookie to make dumb mistakes sometimes. And how many guys, and it would be totally understandable, would just try to use their arm and gun it to home plate themselves. And, you know, it could be feet off the base. It could be whatever. The fact that he had the composure to think about it and say, you know what, I'm going to throw this to my relay man, who's Sadon Rafaela, who's just a defensive beast, and he's going to do with the ball what, you know, needs to be done. That was just really, really great. You know, it was great composure. And so far, I mean, you look at all of the sort of defensive stats and whatnot, whether it's run saved, whether it's outs above average, average, he is an above average defender right now. He's feeling comfortable in the outfield, which is great to see because I believe it was his first game up. He made that silly misread on the ground ball. It went right through his glove. And we were like, oh, here we go. There goes the circus Sox again. The guys who come up, they're genetic freaks. And of course, they don't know how to play the actual game, the fundamentals. You know, that was the big concern, I think, with a lot of us. And it's been really nice to see him immediately take ownership of that, say, yeah, that was terrible. No excuse for that. Immediately get to work. We saw him with the coaches practicing the exact same play, pretty much making sure it'll never happen again. And sure enough, I mean, so far I have here in 221 innings of playing the outfield, he is a well above average defender. It's beautiful to see.
Yeah. Another thing he did earlier on, and Terry and I actually talked about this in one of the shows, is he misjudged a ball so bad that was clearly off the wall in right field. I think it was Baltimore, that Rafaela had to field it, even though it was like a dead right line drive. And we talked about that. And we're like, these are the things that you can't see in the big leagues. And I haven't seen it since we really talked about it. So like you said, Nick, credit to the player for taking the coaching, the feedback, doing the drills to understand those things. And his maturity, how fast he's developed into such an impactful player. I don't remember anybody like this in recent memory. You know, I mean, like Pedroia came up, he was terrible his first year, terrible. We looked it up on a show last year. You know, Xander was kind of ferreted all over the place and wasn't this. I mean, he kind of blossomed into it. If he stays this level, he's going to be a stud for a long time. Imagine if he improves.
Yeah, I think Pedroia is probably the best comparison from a maturity standpoint and the accountability and just that drive to, you know, desire to want to be better. I think that's probably one of the more encouraging things about Roman Anthony because there's definitely been shaky moments defensively in the outfield, more towards the beginning of his tenure here up in the big leagues. But he's owned it and he's putting in the work to be better. And I mean, to be honest with you, when you think about some of the core and foundational pieces we've had the last couple of years, and I mean, I hate to keep dogging on, but like think about like a Devers, like he's the worst third baseman defensively for 7 years. Right. Yeah. Like at what point were you going to make an effort to not be the worst third baseman in the MLB? And it just never happened. So the fact that Roman Anthony is putting in and doing the due diligence to be the best player he can be defensively is it's encouraging.
You guys want me to bring you down to earth a little bit on this? Probably not, but I'm going to do it anyways. Guys, every day, every week, every month, he continues to show what he's going to be for the next 15 years. He becomes farther and farther from signable. He has no injury history that I'm aware of. Certainly nothing like Story or Marcelo. His maturity on the field, I'm sure, extends to his preparation off the field. He's already mentioned before he even made it to the big leagues that he, you know, that's something he could do is just play out the rookie deal and max out earlier on. He's 21 years old, so he's going to reach that in his mid to late 20s. This team will never pay him if he becomes a half a billion dollar type player. They're never going to pay him. So it makes it interesting because I think his signability chances are going down with the level of success he's having.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely fair. I think when it comes to his combination of discipline and everything else, one player comp that I've been hearing from multiple people, and I'm not so brash as to make this comparison yet, just because you need more success for me to definitively say this, but a lot of people have said Anthony is very Soto-like in a lot of ways in his understanding of the strike zone at such a young age. That power that he's able to generate that makes opposing pitchers scared of him. You know, they want to pitch around him, and he's going to be the guy who says, okay, if you want to hand me first base, I'll take it, dude. And the guys behind me will drive me in. The problem with that, of course, it's beautiful to have a Soto-like player that you're growing, but exactly what you said, Jeremy, look at how much Soto eventually cost. And look at the team that Soto came up with. They couldn't keep him. They sent him to the Padres. They couldn't keep him. They sent him to New York. They couldn't keep him. And so New York, unfortunately, had to watch him go across town to a team that was willing to pony up and pay a steep price, which the Mets have been doing a lot recently.
Conspiracy theory.
I don't like the Soto-like comparison because I don't like the Soto's personality and some of the other things that go to in it. So that, you know, don't
just
love
the
all
tool
of that.
Kit,
yeah. Okay, fine. Go ahead, Chris.
So I have a conspiracy theory. So as soon as you said that, Jeremy, it made me start thinking, maybe that's what the money for the Devers trade. We got rid of him so we can get that $300 million back to start saving up, maybe with some compound interest, so we could pay Roman Anthony.
And if you believe that, John Henry is thinking that way, you know?
It's like, if you believe that...
I have a 2017 Chevy with low miles, you know, for 35, it's yours, Chris.
That would be nice. It would certainly be nice. That would be the happy ending, certainly.
I just don't... That's something I'm going to be on the show tomorrow night for the trade deadline, and I am ready to go with my John Henry take tomorrow night, guys, because that guy is a cheap bleeper, and I can't stand the anything about him.
Oh, yeah. You know, should we go into a little bit of the trade deadline stuff, a couple of the moves that we saw today, very shocking. Let's just, you know, roll out one of the big ones where I just mentioned the Mets, right? What the heck are the Mets doing? They've made two trades now for bullpen arms. They traded for Tyler Rogers, who, along with his brother, funnily enough, I believe they were both traded on the same exact day, which is quite entertaining. Taylor Rogers, I believe, is the other one, going from the Reds to the Pirates as part of that Cabrian Hayes deal, which is very odd that the Pirates would take a relief pitcher that I believe only has 1 year or maybe one more of control and send over Cabrian Hayes. Of course, his bat has sort of turned into a noodle recently, but his defense is still good and he's on a pretty team-friendly contract. Tyler Rogers, meanwhile, went from the Giants, who we were talking about Devers' struggles as the plate. One man doesn't sink a whole team. That team, the Giants, have unfortunately fallen apart. They have been awful to the point that they look to be selling off pieces. Now, Tyler Rogers is an excellent, excellent closer. He's one of those guys, he throws submarine. Absolutely. I have the arm angle here. It's negative 60 degrees. And just an amazing pitcher, this year especially. But they ended up sending over to the Giants. They sent over Jose Buto, who is a decent-looking swingman reliever. He's had some success in the past. I think his numbers last year over 74 innings were pretty good. He's been fully in the pen this year. He has team control until all the way through 2030. And then in addition to that, you would think, okay, well, I'll send you a relief pitcher that's controlled for, you know, the next 5 years. You send me an elite closer that's a free agent. But in addition to that, the Mets also sent two prospects, a 24-year-old who is down in AAA right now, Drew Gilbert, as well as Blade Tidwell, who is a starting pitcher, 24 years old, down in AAA, and has made his major league debut this year. If that's any indication of the price going around at this deadline for a premium relief pitcher, I actually thought that the Phillies giving Mick Abel for Johan Duran, I thought that that was a much more reasonable deal than what the Mets paid. And then again, the thing with Ryan Helsley, they just traded for, they sent over three minor leaguers, granted all A ball, not sure how high, but I think one of them was graded as highly as being number 8 in the Mets system. Does that worry you for seeing if Craig is going to be willing to pay a price like that for players this year?
Yeah, I mean, anytime you see high price tags, the way that the Sox have operated, it has to scare you, right? And on the Mets point, like, I mean, they, this whole offseason, they've been trying to basically emulate the Dodgers and their spending and what they do. The difference is the Dodgers came into this offseason or the season with the third best ranked farm system in the MLB, even handing out all these crazy contracts. The Mets, I think, came in 12th, somewhere around there, and they just gave away a ton of prospects. So, I mean, that's not helping their case. But back to the, you know, my concern about the Sox. Yeah, it concerns me. I mean, we came up with the best farm system, so we have the prospect pool to do it. And I think, you know, you have to be willing to pull the trigger and get rid of some of these guys, which we did. Like, we got rid of Keel to get Crochet. And I think if it's the right players, the right contracts, and there's some, controllable contracts, and it fits the long-term outlook of what we want this team to be, or whatever, I guess, Craig Breslow wants this team to be, then, yeah, we're going to have to do it. But to answer your question, yeah, it scares me, the price tag. You know, the only thing I would say is there's a couple of interesting proposed trades out there and players that are available that teams are, like, looking to potentially dump. Like, I had put in the war room, I think, the Guardians mentioning, like, Stephen Kwan and Shane Bieber. And there's rumors where, like, the asking price isn't that high, and then somewhere, like, it's reasonable to borderline high. So, I mean, I guess it's going to all depend on who it's going to be, the right partner, the right team, and the right deal is what it looks like.
I mean, look, from my perspective, I'm concerned that contenders are already out making moves, and we're hearing crickets out of Boston. When we started this podcast, I think the Rays were still up 1-0. So I think that score has turned, but there was a chance we were going to end in a virtual tie with the Yankees. Tampa Bay
just did. Beautiful. Like.
Yep. So that's exciting. Thank you. Thank you, Randy. Now, so if that game goes to finish the way it is, we're in a virtual tie with the Yankees. In the AL, I think we're four and a half back. Hold the first, tied for the first wild card. What are we doing here, Breslow? What are we doing? I'm not a big prospect guy. I've said this on this show, I don't know, a dozen times. I would much rather take the proven big league commodity than hope that 2, 3, 4 prospects work out, because the numbers dictate that maybe one of those guys is going to be a serviceable big leaguer. So I just... And sometimes it stings. Teal could end up being a Hall of Famer, and it's like, geez, what do we do? Well, in that case, we were pretty good because we got Garrett Crochet, who could also kind of be on that trajectory. But sometimes it works out. Sometimes you give away a prospect and they blossom into something, you know? But sometimes you know, you got to do it. You got to do it. Now, to that point, this is not Craig Breslow's decision. I'm going to talk about this tomorrow night after what happens, and I know how it's going to happen. This is a John Henry decision. Okay, let's make this very, very clear. If John Henry says, go get everything you want, there's no budget, use all of the Devers money, then you're going to see tomorrow be one of the more exciting days, at least in current memory, for being a Boston Red Sox fan. That's not what's going to happen, because the Fenway group says this asset has been allocated enough for this season. And so you're going to see a minor move. You're going to see a bullpen arm, you know? So that's what's going to happen. If it was the other way, if it was what we all want, which is John Henry to say Breslow go, you would have saw things happening today.
Yeah, we've seen the interest kings that the Red Sox have been. I saw that we were pursuing Duran. You know, some people were excited about the potential for a Duran type of dual action. And then what do you know, the Phillies come in and granted gave an asset that I don't think we could have matched necessarily. Mick Abel, I'm not super familiar. I know that at least he was considered to be a very promising starting pitching prospect. I believe he just made his debut this year. And I think he only has like 6 starts or around there. So, I mean, they gave a starting pitcher with presumably, right, 6 years of control practically. I don't know. I mean, we'd probably have to give up a guy like Harrison or something. And I'm not too sure if the Sox are in a position necessarily with their rotation to do something like that. But it is frustrating. You know, I see someone in the comments, El Jefe says, can you opine on the Sox trading for Nathan Eovaldi or Chris Sale? Really, it's funny because the short list of starting pitchers that we wanted has been getting shorter as the deadline is drawn nearer, unfortunately. Joe Ryan is probably not going to be moved. Seth Lugo signs the surprising extension with the Royals. Chris Bubich out for the year suddenly. Right now, we've gotten some bad news on Chris Sale, I guess, about how long he's going to spend. He was recently transferred to the 60-day IL. I think I've heard late August is his return, and who knows, honestly. You know, as amazing as this season was for him last year, Chris Sale is a guy who is prone to freak accidents, you know, so it's very possible that that could be a season end for him, unfortunately. When it comes to Eovaldi would have been a nice pickup, as would have been DeGrom. Obviously, the money there would have maybe had to result in some finagling. But I can't imagine Texas selling right now. You know, Seattle just bought quite a bit, but they've not been playing their best baseball. Texas stands at just a game out of the wild card. So I imagine that just like how the Guardians now are sort of selling off, the Rays are selling off, the Rangers are kind of moving in the opposite trajectory. And they're probably going to be in an arms race alongside the Mariners and then us, the Yankees, you know, trying to figure out, all right, we're sort of in like one of those Mexican standoffs, you know, like the good, the bad, and the ugly, where there's only 3 spots right now. Which 3 of us is it going to be, you know, out of the 4 at this point, unless someone like the Royals makes an unbelievable run, you know, towards the end.
Chris Sale probably got hurt as soon as he heard the Sox might be interested.
I have a take here. The interest kings. That's great. I'm going to adopt that and use it moving forward. Guys, fans, of which I am one, if you're still falling for it, it's now at the point where it's on you, the fan, for believing it. If you believed we were in on Juan Soto, I still got that 2017 I was trying to sell Chris, okay? If you think and shame on the Passins and the Cotillos of the world for continuing to report that the Red Sox are on it. When Sam Kennedy calls you and says, I think we got a chance at fill in the blank, somebody we're not going to go spend the money on, it's on us for believing it, because they've been doing it to us forever. And it just doesn't happen. So I see those tweets. I see them just like everyone else does. And I go, next tweet. Yeah, right. Okay. Yeah, sure. I'm not buying it. You guys have tried to do that to me too many times. I stop talking about it. Stop doing the leaks to Passan and Cotillo and whoever else, and just go be about it. Do it. Go win. Go push your chips in the middle and try to win. The big league product this year has put you in a position where probably you didn't want to be, because everyone's going to be pointing at you tomorrow when there's only a bullpen move. So, you know what you could go do? Go add a player to the Joe Ryan deal and go get him.
Yep.
You know, you want to do it, go do it.
And then before I'll start you jump in, Chris, a little more of that example of the short list getting shorter. Just 51 seconds ago, Cubs are acquiring Mike Soroka from the Nationals.
Wow.
So that's another guy who, you know, his FIP's been pretty good this year. He was looked at. We'll see what the return is, but that was another name I heard tossed around for the Sox. And, you know, we're running out of guys to get.
Well, the only thing I would say that's encouraging about so far the deadline is, outside of the Mariners, there's not many American League moves that I go, oh, man, this really killed the Sox. Like, the Yankees have, I mean, honestly, almost made net negative moves. So I'm not even going to get into that. And that's not hating on the Yankees. That's just a fact. You made a really good point, Jeremy, about like prospects versus actual talent, right? And, you know, we have hope in prospects, and, you know, we have to hope that all these guys hit. We talk about it a million times. And I think the Kyle Teal trade is a perfect example, because you said, like, yeah, he might be a Hall of Famer. But guess what? So could Carlos Narvaez. We don't know. It's a guy that literally came out of nowhere. We got rid of him. We were all down, like, damn, we had to get rid of Kyle Teal to get Crochet. Like, this is good, but, like, what did it really cost us? And out of nowhere, we end up – and I get it. That's, you can't count on that. But the point is, just as much as you can't count on getting Carlos Narvaez to replace Kyle Teal, you couldn't count on Kyle Teal being a Hall of Famer just because we're speculating he might be. Like, it's a crapshoot. It's always going to be a crapshoot, this sport.
Completely.
So, but proven commodities, they're not crapshoots. Whether they stay, you know, healthy, don't get injured, just like any other player, that's a chance you all have to take, right? It's a sport. There's injuries.
It's a much higher percentage play, though.
The probability, though, yeah, of success is a lot higher, because as long as they're not hurt, they're going to be producing, because they're going to do what the back of their baseball card says. But you're not going to go off a baseball card of a guy that's playing in single A, double A, or triple A. It's just not reasonable. A name that I think is interesting.
Agreed.
That, and I'm not saying they're going to trade him, but I want your guys' take. Like, is it viable at this point with Marcelo Meyer and the injury concerns? If you get a team that calls up and makes you an offer, do you consider it?
I think you have to consider it. You know, in my philosophy, there's no such thing as a truly untouchable player. It just depends on the return.
I follow that sentiment.
Yeah, I would say I'm at this point in agreement. I don't think there's such thing as an untouchable player. And I think the proof is in the pudding. The last 4 years, you know, it would hurt because he's been one of the – he started off as the guy before Roman Anthony had this ascendance the last couple of years. He was supposed to be the guy that was going to come up here and change the outlook and the foundation of the Sox moving forward. But since then, he's been injured anywhere he has played. And some of them has been significant time, season ending. And it sucks, because I love his defense. I love the energy he brings. He has a great relationship with Roman Anthony. Seemingly they're seeing it all together, out when they're not playing baseball. But for the right return and something that's going to help this team this year and for the foreseeable future, I think you have to consider it. And damn it, the Yankees just tied the game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, it's an interesting idea. You know, one name that I'd like to toss around, I don't know if you guys have noticed or seen the buzz, but a lot of people are reporting that Christian Campbell over the last week or two is looking a lot more confident at the plate. Right now, you know, we know that he was struggling with average for a bit down in AAA. He was walking a lot, but wasn't actually hitting for average. Right now, in 128 plate appearances down there in AAA, he's currently slashing .267, .398, .438. For an .837 OPS. I think he just had a big hit either today or yesterday again. That guy, if he could figure himself out, that would be a massive boost for us and take a lot of the pressure off. You know, a big problem I think that Breslow is going to have with this whole deadline is exactly the article that, Chris, you pointed out a few days ago, which was that article coming out where they were talking about how the deadline is the definition of inefficient, right? It's inefficiency. And that's true, but it's also kind of a card game in a lot of ways. You know, Eugenio Suarez clearly was costing too much for the Yankees. They went out, they got a guy they felt they could get for a more reasonable price in McMahon. Obviously, they're going to have him for a few years. The problem with holding your cards so close to the chest, Eugenio Suarez, the Diamondbacks don't want to get nothing for him, right? They obviously want a return for a guy like that. It would be a terrible miscalculation to hang on to your assets like Suarez, Kelly. So when we get down to the final day here and the clock is ticking, hopefully, and hopefully we're playing some sort of long con. I'm not willing to give Craig that much credit, but hopefully these teams are going to have to sort of back down from their position. And suddenly where they're saying, oh yeah, we want, you know, two top 10 prospects in your system and, you know, a major league ready guy. Maybe they start to panic a little bit and go, oh God, well, I guess the Yankees are off the table. I guess this team, you know, just got their guy, right? The Reds. And suddenly the contenders start to slip. Hopefully we can talk them down to, all right, how about like, you know, how about that Tibbs guy, right? How about David Sandlin, you know, and get away from the Peyton Tolley, the Stinson Garcias, you know, the guys, the really just small handful of guys. I'm like, ooh, that would really hurt to give up, especially for a guy who's only going to be here for a year.
My take on Campbell is, man, he's starting to hit at the right time to kind of increase his value if we need him in for trade, especially if it's for a player like Joe Ryan.
Yeah.
So that's my position on that. I think we have a balanced lineup for the most part. We have some clear imbalances that can be fixed simply by getting the right single player. And I'd be willing to push any number of not big league ready chips, including Campbell, in the middle, if it means that we have a chance to go make a run this year. So that's my position on that side of it. On Suarez, I don't know what the packages were being asked for in the discussion with the Yankees, so I don't know. But obviously, as you get closer to the deadline, the leverage starts to rotate off of the team with the asset into the teams that want the assets, because you'd have a Xander situation like we had a few years ago where we wound up not trading him when we should have been sellers, and you lose, you know, that player bringing something back at the time he's going to go. They botched that. The Sox botched that, obviously. So we'll see. If it was Theo or Dombrowski, I'd feel a lot differently than if it was Craig Breslow with John Henry's thumb on him. As I've said a number of times, I'm not optimistic about how tomorrow's going to come out.
Another interesting name is Vaughn Grissom. I've been hearing. I mean, he, with his words, I mean, it's almost
packaging in there
put
too.
Packaging. You want two second basemen to get, you know, two for the price of one, two chances at a lottery.
Well, didn't you hear, Chris? Campbell's a first baseman.
Oh, yeah. Well, anyone that leaves the Sox decides they want to be a first baseman. See how successful. Hopefully he's a little better than Devers. But, you know what's an interesting point to kind of shift gears but support the whole deadline point? Do you know how many teams in the American League have a better expected win-loss record than the Sox?
I'm going to guess just four.
It's a good guess. Three. Wow. You want to guess the three?
I would say the Tigers, the Astros, and the Yankees?
Close. So the Yankees by one game, the Tigers by a half a game, and the Texas Rangers. The Houston Astros, we have a better expected win record. We have a better than the Toronto Blue Jays. In fact, the Toronto Blue Jays have almost the worst in our division. Only the Orioles have a worse expected win-loss rate.
Wow.
So it just goes to show that, like, if our team was just a little bit better – and just close the gap on a couple of things, like, they're not that far off. They really, but I mean, on the flip side of that argument, the Yankees should be better too. But it's interesting just to look. I actually would have thought we'd have a better expected win. I think we're three games off of our actual pace, or four games off. And in my head, I can remember like 10 games where I'm like, I feel like we should have won that. One of them being the first Twins game. Hopefully that's one of the four on that list. But I digress.
Definitely. It is interesting how as rocky the road has been to get to where we are in the season. Early on in the season, I mean, the Red Sox were playing some despicable baseball, and you all heard it. If you were listening to the show back then, you heard exactly what we thought about it. And they have turned themselves around in a way that's impressive. Sometimes it's easy when you're a big fan of one team. I mean, we know pretty intimately this roster. We know its strengths. We know its weaknesses. But it's easy to overlook some of the other teams, like the Blue Jays, like the Tigers, like the Astros, the Mariners, the Rangers. I don't really know a lot of those guys. I don't know their strengths and their weaknesses. I see their record. I can say they're better than us. But I'm sure that whatever Bastards of Baseball or a Boston baseball equivalent there is for other cities, you know, I'm sure those guys are on there saying, oh, we don't deserve 60 wins. We don't deserve, you know, whatever it is. We've been playing really good baseball this month. We ended up 4-5 in that juggernaut stretch versus those three National League teams. And so far in July, we're 16-7. I mean, that's a killer pace, man. It really is. And I feel like this is the time, especially with Judge out. And you never root for injuries, obviously. I hate injuries. But, you know, the reality of the situation is that team could be in trouble right now. That's blood in the water. That there's no real excuse not to try to leapfrog, you know. We're at a point right now where we're only 5 wins away from the Tigers and the Blue Jays. We are right now a win more than the Yankees, depending on how their game finishes. We'll see if it finishes that way. We're only 3 wins below the Astros. You know, we are in this conversation, whether we like it or not. We have a lot of people, you know, who we see, whether they're, you know, in our community or whether they're just in the wider Red Sox Twitter. You see a lot of people who say, oh, we're going to get swept this series. Oh, we're terrible. Oh, we need to sell. At this point, you can't, right? You need to commit to this because this is the best position the Red Sox have been in for years, easily since 2021. We've got a chance to make the playoffs. Craig needs to man up and figure himself out and make some hardline deals tomorrow. I need Yandy Diaz or Ryan O'Hearn. You know, I'd be fine with Yandy would be sweet, but I'd be fine with another first baseman. I'm not sold on Toro entirely. Him batting second tonight, we were lucky to weather that storm, I think. And I mean, I know that Merrill Kelly might be a long shot. At this point, with how Buehler's been pitching and Fitz has been pitching, people have been throwing around the idea of Charlie Morton. Fine, go get Charlie Morton and Merrill Kelly. Reinvent the back of this rotation. Give us a number 4 and a number 5. Oh, man. Yeah, I'm going to be having antacids, though. I'm taking all day tomorrow, that's for sure.
For sure.
Yeah, I was wavering on that. When they went 4-5 and we had another slow start coming out of the break, I was like, you know what? This team doesn't deserve help. They really don't. They've done everything they could to basically give the front office an excuse to basically turn their heads and let them drown. But, you know, Randy put up – Randy. Say Randy's name more than our players at this point. Thank you, Randy.
Randy's the MVP.
He's MVP today. So he put up an interesting stat. You know, there's been a lot of comparisons between the team last year and this year because they both gotten – you know, they got hot going into the break and then the slow start coming out. The difference was I think we were 10 or 11 games above 500 going into it last year. This year, about 8, even despite that 10-game winning streak going into it. But coming out of it now, same point. We're 59-51. We were 58-52. And you may go, that's only a game. But think about the difference. 11 games versus 8, we're 7 games above. We were only 6 last year with that 5 in hand. So it is a tale of two cities or two teams, if you will, when you look at the momentum factor at the same exact point. It's minuscule on paper, but when you know we just looked at the expected win losses and then our actual win losses, talking about 3 games here, 2 games there, that's enough if we're able to make the right moves to more than close that gap. And I know Jeremy's not expecting it. I'm kind of, you know, I'm trying to dream. I'm trying to sit somewhere with Nick. But I am in the middle in the picture, so I literally am in the middle right now. I want to dream, but I've also been hit so many damn times in the head that I'm starting to think like Jeremy. So,
yeah, definitely. Expect nothing.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, one last thing I'll say too before we maybe look into obviously the day off, but then the Astros series, of course, is I forget exactly what the league looked like at this point last year as well, but it feels like there's just so much vulnerability in the American League this year. You know, funnily enough, you look at everyone's last 10 games, right? The Tigers are 4-6 in their last 10. The Blue Jays are 5-5. The Astros are 5-5. The Yankees are 5-5. The Mariners are 4-6. We're 6-4. The Rangers are 7-3. They're as great as the Tigers and the Blue Jays and the Astros have been. They're not like red hot right now. They're pretty much at the same point as us. There are a few wins more so than us in the loss win-loss column, but we're all just sort of treading water. It really does just have this atmosphere in the air that this is anyone's league still. You know, we could talk about the National League when we get there. There's a lot of juggernauts, as we unfortunately were on the receiving end of. But as far as ALCS goes, if we bolster this roster, which I do agree is a big if, we'll see. I'm optimistic only to the extent that, you know, I'm not going to curse Craig Breslow's name until it's time to. You know, I have the voodoo doll at the ready, but I'm leaving it, you know, it's tucked into bed right now. It really does feel like if we go out there and we have a meaningful deadline, and instead of Danny Jansen and Luis Guerrero, I think was the guy's name last year, instead of those guys, we add a Merrill Kelly and a Yandy Diaz. I feel like that's all the difference. It's just this year, any fears that we had of giving ownership excuse, right, to sell, they have no excuse, which means we should all be ready to boo the living heck out of them if they do fold on this deadline, because it's going to be a lot of disappointment. I think it's going to hurt worse than it has since 2022, really. I mean, easily.
Yeah, I mean, they've finally given us a reason to really, quote unquote, believe. And I'll take it a step further, because I agree with you. The American League, there's no juggernaut. I would even say even in the National League, there has not been a team that has not looked vulnerable. You know, when you have all-time great teams, like we'll just say, for the sake of the argument, 2018 Red Sox, right? I don't think we went on more than a 4 or 5-game losing streak that season at any point. Right. And every team this year has done that. And then some. So, yeah, there's good teams. National League is filled with them, but they're vulnerable. They're beatable teams, especially depending on when you catch them.
Agreed.
Yeah. You know, a 100 win season, I believe, is a 617 percentage, 617. If I didn't fat thumb it and put something in wrong. Yeah. 100 divided by 162. Is 617. Right now, the best winning percentage in the American League is 582. You know, so it would be very interesting to see what goes on here. As far as strength of schedule is, we're the 10th strongest strength of schedule, so the 10th most difficult. We've got 3 games against the Tigers, 3 against the Blue Jays, 7 against the Yankees, 6 against the Astros, 3 of which we will be starting on Friday. Let's talk predictions. Obviously, tomorrow is the deadline. A lot could change. But on Friday, we did bump the crochet start back a few days. And I heard there was no concerns about injury. It was literally just a load management thing, which is kind of interesting. For me, I almost wonder if there isn't a bit of game theory going on there where they're like, you know what? We need as many wins as we can get. If we're going to sort of punt on a starting pitching day, let's make it versus the Astros versus Hunter Brown and let Crochet try to get one over on the Royals. I think maybe there's a little bit of strategy involved there. Not sure if that's the truth or not. But yeah, we're getting Hunter Brown versus to be determined on August 1st at 7:10 p.m. Then it's Colton Gordon versus Walker Buehler and Framber Valdez versus Lucas Giolito. How are we feeling about the Astros? Just looking at that, let's say that both us and the Astros pretty much stand pat.
Yeah, it's obviously tough because there's going to be some moves. Look, they really should have swept the Twins. Okay. if somebody like with a functioning right arm could go out there and throw the ball over the plate in the ninth inning of that game one. I love the response. I don't care who it is. I love the response. You weather the nine games, you go 4-5. And then you really dominate this series for the most part. I like their chances. I think Giolito is kind of back avoiding big first innings and that sort of thing. I also love the move to push Crochet. It's something I talked about before the season started. I said, skip starts, skip the start around the All-Star break. They chose not to do that. So here it is, week 10 days, 12 days after the All-Star break, and you push him back and give him some rest. I like it. I think it's a smart, intelligent decision. It shows you trust your pitching staff, especially after what Bayo did today. I think they're going to go win the series 2 games out of 3. And I think they're going to continue to play competitive baseball. And, you know, I just like they've done, I expect them to stay right where they're at.
Yeah, I would agree. I think the Valdez and Giolito matchup is going to be good. I'm not that scared of the Astros. I don't know why. And in my mind, I always like think of that division, even though, you know, you have Seattle in the mix and wild card and, you know, Rangers kind of knocking on there. And then God forbid we could actually beat the Angels at some point. But I still think of that as like one of the weaker divisions because the Astros aren't what they used to be. The Rangers kind of fallen off because they were kind of perennial contenders, at least for a wild card, not necessarily the division. They won a World Series recently. And Seattle's kind of always perennially been in the case for a wild card, but I just like the way that we're playing right now. And I mean, Houston's looked very beatable the last couple of weeks, especially coming out of the break, but you know, we could have a stinker. Who knows? We could even get swept. Like, it wouldn't shock me if we got swept either. Right. Cause I don't think the Astros are a bad team, but they don't scare me. So I feel good going into the series. And I would probably say I expect them to take 2 or 3 Sox.
Yeah, you know, I think a lot of it's going to come down to who that to be determined really is. I mean, Hunter Brown has been a really good pitcher this year, but over his last 4 games, he's had 3 kind of bad ones. So we could be catching him at the right time. I'm going to like mentally prepare myself for like a 1-3. You know, I think we might lose this series, but it's not the type of like lost series that I don't think we're getting swept. I think that this is going to be a good showing, competitive baseball, and you sort of soldier on and say, you know what, let's go get the Royals after this. Regardless, you know, really looking forward to hearing your guys' takes. It's going to be you, Jeremy, along with Chris, right, tomorrow?
Yes, sir.
That'll be a lot of fun. Can't wait to see the deadline moves. Hopefully, of recording this, the Yankees are losing in the bottom of the 10th, 4-3. Hopefully something there happens. You know, fingers crossed. It would be really nice if we could leapfrog them in the standings. I think we would tie with them in the standings. And, I mean, we'd own the tiebreaker, I'm pretty sure. So thank you, guys. I've been Nick, joined by Chris and Jeremy. We've been the Bastards of Boston. You have been wonderful. Thank you for listening. And take care, everybody. Let's go, Boston Red Sox.
Go Sox.